Hello.
Greetings.
How much snow do you have over there?
We have some snow on the ground, but we didn't get any snow this weekend.
Oh, you didn't get hammered like Daryl, who's got a curfew, or you get arrested.
Yeah, we have no troubles here. It's pretty funny to see the reaction of everybody on the. We get these storms sometimes on the East Coast where it's really just along the ocean,
Yeah.
and it doesn't get into us over here, and so, but it's kind of amusing to see everybody posting pictures like, "Oh my God, look at all this snow!" Yeah, that's just a usual winter for us.
Yeah,
It's no big deal.
we get a lot like that.
Yeah,
Matter of
you guys do
fact,
too.
it shows they're shoveling it, and sometimes it takes me like 5 hours just to do a driveway
Oh man, yeah,
because
we have
it's
a.
heavy, heavy shit. You know what I mean? Just heavy snow, and you can't just push it out. And I don't have a snow blower.
Oh, you can't. Where we live, you can't get away with not having a snow blower.
Yeah, we only get
It's just.
like, I think we only get like two, maybe bad ones a year. And other than that, you can just shovel it, you know?
Yeah. Once, because we have the snow blower, I don't even bother shoveling. Even the times where I could, it's only a small amount.
Well,
If it's enough that I need to clear the driveway, then I just run the snow blower.
how deep could it be for the snow blower not to work?
Well, last year we got dumped on that storm that was around Thanksgiving where we were stuck in the house for most of the week. I had to take it really slowly. I eventually cleared a path over the process of a couple of days to the end of the driveway. But yeah, I was having to use the shovel, knock the snow down. And so, I mean, I guess it probably have to be maybe 3, 4 feet or something like that.
Yeah.
The deeper it is, the slower you have to go. It has a lot of different settings on it, how fast it moves, and you just kind of have to take it real slow if it's super deep. But so far, thankfully, this year I've ran it a few times, but it's all been pretty small snowfalls. And this year we've had a pretty mild winter p compared to the last two.
Yeah.
Because we had that storm last November. After that was over with, I was just done with the winter, and that was only the beginning of it. So that made for a long winter last year.
Yeah, it's time to move to Florida.
Seriously.
Get hit with hurricanes.
Yeah. Honestly, if I were moved somewhere warm, I'd rather move down the closer to you, southwest area.
I like that idea. You
I'd
should
rather
do
live in
that.
like Arizona or something than Florida.
Well, I think you should come to Colorado and then migrate to stay here, a couple of years, help me with my collection, and
There you go.
and then you can move on to
Yeah.
Arizona.
I'll move and move down, hang out with your parents or something. I could be their new
I'll be
son.
in New Mexico.
Yeah.
I went when I went there on business travel though, just recently, it was fucking cold. I mean, it wasn't a lot of snow, but it was really cold.
Was it Arizona or New Mexico?
New Mexico.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I know there's parts of Arizona too that get a lot, like Flagstaff and stuff, because of the elevation, they get a lot of snow. Yeah, it's been a little while since we recorded, because, well, we came off the holiday break, and then I was sick, and then you were sick, and you were away.
Yeah.
Both my wife and I got real sick after Christmas.
Maybe we had the same thing.
Maybe.
I don't know. I don't think it was the flu. It's just a really bad cold. I thought the
Yeah,
flu comes with like body aches and stuff. Usually.
I don't. My wife had some body aches. I didn't have too bad. I don't think we had the flu. It was mostly a head cold. I just had a lot of congestion and sore throat and that kind of junk.
Yeah, it was rough
Cough.
because I had to work with it.
Yeah.
And like, after 10 hours, I didn't give a shit. I just wanted to go home.
Yeah, that sucks to not be
It's
able
like,
to rest at home and to be on the road like that.
at least I could go to my old room. I was staying with my mom and dad.
Oh, there you go. You had a little bit of comfort
Yeah, a little bit.
still. But yeah, having to work those hours and stuff. Not
Yep.
good. Not good. So this is Retrocast
This is
episode
Weathercast, the
65,
Weathercast.
Weathercast number one
Yeah.
slash Retrocast 15 slash Mike M's Weekly Reads. That show's interesting because it went from episode 14 to episode 25 and then back to episode 16.
Oh, did it
I'm
go
just
up?
noticing that, yeah.
That's funny.
Got some interesting numbering on that
How
show.
the hell did that happen?
Looks like you did 25
Well,
instead
I
of
actually tried
15.
to see if how like renumbering helps.
Yeah.
Do you remember back in the day when like Stormwatch and Image did that? They had numbering and it was going like 1, 2, 3, 4, and then they had issue 25, and then they had to work their way up to issue 25.
Yeah, it's like a flash forward.
Yeah, it's like a flash forward.
I think Chew did that too. They put
Did
out a.
they do it? Yeah. And I
Yeah.
know Quantum and Woody did too.
Yeah. So when you get to. You go to episode 24 to 26. And people have to go back and fill in the blank.
It would be a, as a writer, it would be a fun thing, but it would also it's be challenging because you're writing yourself into something.
Yeah, you
Like
really would have to plan
if
things out if
yeah, if you get like, a few issues in and you're like, man, this character really panned out differently, you and then you wrote that issue, you're stuck with it and you have to figure out how to get there, so
Yeah.
it limits your flexibility, but it is kind of interesting.
Yep. Yeah, positives and negatives to it, I suppose.
I read my first Choose Your Own Adventure comic book.
Oh yeah,
Yeah,
I used to love those
it
books.
was in The Simpsons. But it was like, Grandpa Simpson was telling a story, and it's like if he's gonna answer Lisa this way, then you turn to page 20. And it would just bounce you all over the place. So the way you read the book was, had like, I don't know, 20 different outcomes you could have,
Right.
maybe more.
Yeah, I used to have a ton of those Choose Your Own Adventure books. I used to love those.
Yeah. There was the games that were like that too.
Yeah.
Old computer games.
You come to a room with a crocodile in it.
Yeah, where do you go? Do you step on the crocodile?
Use
Or do you turn
sword.
around? Yeah.
Yeah, Text Adventures. That's pretty retro.
Yeah, it is.
You didn't even have any
I had a
graphics.
lot of Commodore 64 games like that. And then I subscribed to a magazine. This was like my destiny to become a programmer. There was like a Commodore 64 magazine where it would teach you like basic, and this was a really crude basic, man. It would teach you how to make games, like to leverage sound and all this stuff. And you could make games
That's
that
cool.
were like what I just talked about.
Yeah. Yeah,
Bunch
those are some
of
of the easiest kind of
if-else's.
games to
Yeah.
make. Whew, I've had a bunch of company all of a sudden. Cat and the dog. They're
Yeah,
ready to go.
I heard the squeaky.
Yeah.
The bark box that we got, this was hippie themed.
Oh, for January this month?
Yeah, it was hippie themed. It came with a hippie and like a drug van.
Jeez.
And
Like
the hippie's kind of
shrooms.
cool because he doesn't like squeak when you bite into it, but like if you like swing it around, it makes like a whirling noise. Kind of like in Australia, that one weapon, I forget what they call
Oh,
those.
yeah.
It goes woo, you know, like that's what it does.
Yeah.
It's kind of a unique toy.
That's pretty weird. You should send it back and ask for the punk rock version.
Yeah.
And my dog ain't no hippie.
Hippie treats. They're made out of weed, all kinds of stuff.
Like some doggy shrooms. I know we give Dusty catnip sometimes. He gets pretty tripped out. Just kind of stares off into space, ponders existence.
What is catnip?
I think it's just a plant or something.
What is it for? I've heard it before, but I've never owned cats, so I'm
Right.
naive to it.
I think it's just a kind of a treat for them.
Oh.
Kara? What is catnip for? It's just a plant, right? I mean, it's just a treat for them, right? And it's just a plant. It's just a plant that gets them stoned, she said.
Does it really? Does it make them like light, like walk funny or sleep more or?
It's hard to tell. He sleeps an awful lot to begin with. I think he just kind of gets a little like happy or something.
He's getting up there in age though, isn't he?
Yeah, he's gonna be 13, I think.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's not too interested in playing with his 2-year-old sister. She might
Yeah.
be 3.
She's got all this energy.
Yeah, I'll be playing with her with a toy, and she'll bring it back to me, playing fetch and stuff. And then if he's sitting there, sometimes she'll take the toy and like drop it next to him, like he's gonna do something with it. Like, come on, you join in too. He's just like looks, stares at her, like, what the hell? Right? They're pretty funny.
Yeah.
But so we're back. It's 2016. We're ready to go.
Didn't we do one in 2016?
I don't think so. When was the last one? Or maybe I'm wrong.
I think we did one.
Yeah. No. No, the last one was posted mid-December.
Holy shit.
It's been over a month since we posted an episode.
Damn.
People are foaming at the mouth for this.
Yeah.
They're ready.
I didn't realize it was that long.
I know.
It's like DC noise, man. We try to schedule something and then it doesn't work out for somebody and then we just cancel it. We're like,
Yeah.
fuck it.
Leave the people wanting more, as they say.
Yeah.
So, but you've been doing a lot of your weekly reads and
Well, I mean,
Valiant
I'm way,
Verses
yeah,
and
way behind on that, but I'm trying to do it, not successfully with my voice and shit, but.
yeah. But as far as posts and stuff, you just did one of those, or posted
Well,
one,
we
right?
did one geek brunch then in the new year, what me and Bill did.
Yeah. Put it under your bed.
And you're retiring mythmaking.
Yes, I've decided. I was thinking about it for several months, and I decided I'm retiring my solo podcast. The main reason is because I don't have much to share about it yet, but I want to take that time I was spending on that and try to work on another goal, another project, which would be more of a creative project for me, like an original story.
Yeah.
So I don't know that I'll have much to show for that for a while. I'm just kind of in the planning stages for that. But it's something I've always really wanted to do, and looking back on last year, I don't know that as I get used to spending the time on doing that, it's a different kind of process. So maybe down the road, as I get more used to doing that,
Yeah.
I might be able to fit in some more podcasting time, but I kind of want to clear the slate besides doing this with you to make sure that I get that project going and achieve that goal.
Is it
And then,
writing a novel or is it writing a book or a comic book?
It would be more like a novel.
Yeah.
I want to try to do it though, like in I think I'll probably release it in installments though, but have a lot of it prepared ahead of time.
Yeah.
I'm still kind of working out the details of that and what exactly it's going to be about and everything. Very much in the planning stages, so I can definitely, you know, say how it's going later on, but as far as actually putting anything out or showing something, it's probably going to be a while, but that's the plan. So, hey, what are you doing?
And I thought I was to play with more squeaky toys.
Yeah. Well, it would be certainly fitting a lot of that into whether I want to or not. So that's the plan.
What is she playing with now?
What is this thing? It's some kind of like ferret, no, like a raccoon. It's like this long raccoon that's got a couple squeakies in it. And she just came up and like dropped it on, the cat's on my lap and she's next to me and she dropped the toy right on top of the cat and was trying to get him going.
She wants attention.
Hey. Watch it. Be nice to your brother. She's a little rough with him sometimes.
Man. It's like a parenting.
Oh my gosh, yeah, it is like having two kids and one's like rambunctious and the other one's doesn't want to be bothered.
Yeah, one's like the teenager that doesn't want to move out and the other one's just came out.
Yeah.
It's the 2-year-old.
Yeah, a toddler and a teenager. A grumpy teenager. It's just like, I just want to be in my room by myself, me alone. Except for the whole sitting on his dad's lap thing. That would be a little weird. It's like, if my teenage son was constantly trying to sit on my lap, I'd...
Yeah.
That's just messed up in a lot of ways.
It's love.
Yeah. But, teenage cat can sit on my lap. So anyway, my plan though is, so I was doing myth making episodes, which are just any kind of general topic, comic topic. But then I also had this sub series on the feed of From Kid to Flash. And in one way, it's kind of an interesting stopping point. Not that I'm totally stopping it, but I had covered pretty much everything that all the appearances of Wally West leading up to
Flash,
New Teen Titans. So all of the original Teen Titans volume and all his appearances to that point in Barry Allen's book. So, and that stuff is not covered very much on podcasts and stuff. So I feel good about having covered that and also having read it for the first time, a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, because a lot of the other stuff was Wolfman, right? So,
right.
And a lot of people are favorable of that time period.
Yeah, a lot of people are familiar with it. But I actually am going to kind of continue it.
Here.
So,
that's right.
I'm just going to kind of continue from where I left off with From Kid to Flash as one of my... You know, one of my segments, one of my books will be usually to talk about several, but one of the things that will kind of go into that is because I did tend to go into a lot of detail on the Teen Titans issues because they're not covered as much, but now I'm getting to material that's a little more familiar with listeners. I'm going to be a little more
summary,
do a little more of a summary of the actual overall events of the Titans. New Teen Titans issues. Mm-hmm. And as far as actually focusing and commenting on stuff, keep it kind of focused on Wally. So that's the plan for now.
You know, I want to start reading those trades, the Wolfman trades. I have the issues, but man, it would take like a couple of hernias to lift up and get those books. But I want to revisit some of the early Titan stuff. Right now I just did the Swamp Thing And that, I really liked it.
Yeah, I've never read those. I've wanted to for a long time now.
I've read
I'm sure I will
pieces of it
eventually, but.
because it was still spinner rack time for me. So like I read like maybe three of them out of seven, you know, of the first seven. And I don't remember a lot. So revisiting them was like really cool.
Nice. Yeah, I have. I'm pretty sure that I would like them a lot. You know how you can kind of just tell with certain things that you haven't gotten to that you're most likely going to dig them. My
Yeah.
suspicion is that I'd be pretty into them. Just haven't gotten around to it for whatever reason. But yeah, at some point I definitely got to get to those.
And if you're interested on being on the show, you could contact us. Maybe if you have a free Sunday, you can come on the show.
Yeah, we didn't really have a lot of guests last year, but we had some earlier on. We had some different people on, and even if you have been on before and want to come back on, we usually record Sunday morning, around 10:30 Eastern. Even if you can only make it, for part of the episode or whatever the case may be, and just want to read some old retro comics and talk about them.
Hit
If we
us
get
up.
If we start a new project where we're talking about, like we've done with Buck Rogers and the Fourth World and stuff like that, that's always optional. You can either participate in that or just come on and listen and let us know.
Yeah. So I took Harley to the vet yesterday,
Oh, yeah.
and she had gained 10 pounds in 1 year. And I think it's the last th I think it's the month of January she picked up quite a bit of weight because I was gone for 2 weeks, and she doesn't get walks. You know, we walk a mile or so every day, maybe a little bit more. And he was joking around. We both could exercise some more.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, he told you both go on a diet.
Yeah. And then they want to brush her teeth because she has plaque, and that, oh, I hate that process, because they, when you get your dog's teeth cleaned, they put them on, they put them under so they could brush their teeth.
Yeah. How does she do with have you ever tried brushing her teeth yourself or?
Yeah, we have, but we got lackadaisical on it.
Yeah.
And when you get lackadaisical, the brush doesn't work so much on the hard tartar.
Right, yeah.
That's when you need that, like the pick and all that
The
stuff, you
deep
know?
cleaning, yeah.
Yeah. Just like a human.
Right. Whereas we'll willingly submit ourselves to it at the dentist, but
Yeah.
dogs are like, "What? That doesn't feel good. Get
Actually,
me the hell out of here."
it doesn't work so bad with Harley though, because you get like the toothpaste flavored like peanut butter or something, and
Yeah.
she kind of digs it. She makes weird faces, but it's pretty funny.
Yeah. I forget. We have some, I think we have like chicken flavored toothpaste or something like that.
That's what you use every morning?
Yeah, as a vegetarian, I really enjoy that, the taste
Yeah.
of chicken in my
Chicken.
toothpaste.
That's right. You miss it.
I floss with Slim Jims.
That's right. Step into the Slim Jim. You're not eating it. You're just putting it right
No,
in between your
I'm
teeth.
just rubbing it between my teeth.
Yeah,
I've used that excuse for a lot of things I put in my mouth. Not eating it, I'm just putting it between my teeth.
why don't you kick this one off?
All right. Let's give it a boot. So, while we were talking about it, so might as well start there. So last time we finished up on the last episode of From Kid to Flash, where we left Wally at was he pretty much had told his parents that he was Kid Flash. He revealed his secret identity to them, and then he told him that he was going to quit being the Flash when he got done with college. And he also told Barry Allen, his mentor and his uncle by marriage, that advance notice, I'm going to only keep being Kid Flash for the next 4 years while I'm in college. And, you know, who knows, 4 years in comic book time, who knows how long that would actually last. But as we then move into...
It'll last as long as sales are good.
As long as we want it to, or as long as it would work out, yeah.
Yeah, if he's selling a lot of copies, he'll be in college for like 25 years.
Exactly. Things can change, as we'll find out. And so the New Teen Titans, that was... came together because of Marv Wolfman, Len Wein. They had been at DC at the beginning of their careers briefly, and Marv Wolfman had had actually contributed a little bit to the original Teen Titans volume. And then they had both gone over to Marvel and continued their careers there. Well, they came back to DC, and at the time, the Uncanny X-Men was a big hit for Marvel, and that was partially an influence. There was some new editorial happening at DC, and essentially they kind of convinced DC to give the Teen Titans another shot. And Marv Wolfman was the one that ended up writing it, and they brought in George Perez as the artist, who began being really involved in the series and a strong collaborator with Wolfman, as a lot of people really already kind of know the story. But point is, they took a combination of characters that we'd already seen in Teen Titans, a couple new characters never been seen before, and created a new team. At the time, DC was doing a lot of introductions of their new series by giving people a free 16-page preview of it in another comic for no extra cost. And these weren't 16 pages of the first issue. They were actually original story. And that was the case with the new Teen Titans. Their first installment was seen in DC Comics Presents issue 26, which was the main story was a Superman and Green Lantern team up.
I bought that off the spinner rack.
Nice.
Because the cover. I didn't even know it had the Teen Titans in it. But it looked like Green Lantern was forming Kryptonite.
Exactly.
Out of his ring, yeah.
Superman saying, "Stop it, Green Lantern. Your kryptonite is killing me."
Yeah, yeah.
And Green Lantern says, "Precisely what I had in mind, Superman." And little Mike Myers was like, "Holy shit.
Yeah, I got to buy this. I'm sold."
But
hero fighting hero. It's always been around. There's a lot of people complaining about it, but it's always been there.
Yep. Always enticement. And yeah, I did not buy this off the spinner rack. It cost me a lot more than 50 cents. But, so, you know, there's not a lot to say about Wally in this preview. Really, this preview is taken from Robin's perspective. And that's a smart move because, you know, Robin was really the best known character. A lot of the other Teen Titans that were in the team, going to be in the team, Kid Flash included, as well as Donna Troy, had really not made a lot of appearances recently outside once the Teen Titans book was canceled. And Robin, though, he was, even though he was a Titan and a sidekick, he was really on the same A level as Batman and the other Justice Leaguers and stuff. So everybody, even outside of comic books, knows Robin. And the only other character that wasn't new, Beast Boy, or Changeling, as he now wants to be called, as we hit this series. Again, he was never a full-fledged Titan member. Towards the end of the Teen Titans, they had the Titans West, which he was a part of. But he was more of a Doom Patrol character and not as well-known. So yeah, so this is pretty much from Robin's perspective, where he has a dream and he wakes up in this other reality where the Titans, this new Teen Titans, are already a team. And he's kind of confused by it, and all the team members are wondering what the heck's wrong with them, why he doesn't recognize any of them. So as a reader, you're looking at this and you're kind of in the same position as Robin is, not knowing these things that he doesn't know. So it gives you that perspective. So Kid Flash, he just kind of shows up on the scene and says, hope I'm not too late. I was in the middle of a school test. And Robin's glad to see him at that point because it's somebody else that's familiar to him besides Donna, who's already there. But otherwise, he's faced with Cyborg and Starfire, and who are acting like he should know them. But Kid Flash, like Donna, is confused as to what Robin means and why he's so confused and why he doesn't know anybody. And so he's really not of any help. And that's when Raven appears and tells him that there's something dangerous going on in town, that there's a this sort of protoplasmic being that's threatening downtown. So Robin goes along as the hero that he is, even though he's disoriented. He's going to help out regardless and worry about the other issues later on. The only other thing we kind of really see from Kid Flash is that if you know what's going to come later, you can maybe sort of read into the fact that he seems awfully concerned when this protoplasmic cell seems to grasp onto Raven's soul self. He seems awfully concerned about her. You could kind of read it if you don't know what's to come as just that, he's worried about her and as a teammate. But knowing what's to come, that he'll be kind of have a unique relationship with her. You kind of read into that a little bit. Otherwise, the Titans are able to wrap up the problem with the protoplasmic cell. And we see a little bit more concern from Kid Flash about Raven's well-being. And that's kind of it for the preview. It ends with Robin returning to the reality that he was in at the beginning of the story and feeling sort of confused about everything that happened. But as the preview ends, we see Raven in the background speaking aloud to herself about the fact that this will all make more sense to Robin, that the new Teen Titans aren't something that he imagined, that they do indeed exist and are his future. That's a future that's looming soon. And then you got your last page preview of, or last page is an advertisement for the new Teen Titans #1.
I like those things. I wish they'd do more of that. They kind of did that with Convergence titles, with allowing you to see like what the new DCU was going to be like.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And one thing I liked about it though, it was exclusive content. It wasn't like a preview. It wasn't like, okay, here's what the first 16 pages of the book are going to be. It was original content.
Yeah. So a lot of ways it's very similar to this.
Yeah.
I don't know if it,
I think that was only 8 pages. I cut it in half, but
yeah,
it was still really good.
Which, yeah, given the way the industry's changed and stuff, it's not surprising. So I'm going to cover this time around. I'm also going to cover issues 1 and 2 of New
Okay.
Teen Titans. And again, these are pretty familiar stories to a lot of people. If they're not, I definitely will recommend you read them. But I'll kind of keep the analysis to Wally. So you don't have to have read that preview to jump into the New Teen Titans. It's a good preview in that it entices you to read New Teen Titans number one, I think, but you don't have to have read it. And
Try to put yourself in back at that time period. Based on that preview, do you think you would have been excited? Little Chris Ivy is there reading this. Would you be excited about this group, or would you say, I'll just stick with my DC Comics Presents?
I think so, yeah. I think I would have been into it. In this other reality where I'm into DC Comics, not Marvel when I
Yeah.
was a kid, but
I'm changing your reality.
right. But I think the new characters are intriguing. See that I think they picked some good characters to keep from the first team, and I think Starfire, Raven, and Cyborg are all pretty neat characters. Obviously, they've all had shown staying power since then, so they're all around in some format today. So yeah, I think so. But like I said, you don't have to have read that preview. You get a prologue which deals with Starfire, and so this is where we get to really see the team actually come together for real. And the prologue shows Starfire in outer space being pursued by some other spaceships. But then we jump into Earth and Gotham City, and we're back with Robin. So again, kind of a familiar character. And Raven appears to him, and he recognizes her from her dream. And Raven is very much the one that pulls this team together. And one of the first things she does is to hand Robin the phone and tell him to talk to her friend and convince him to join the team. Raven's very determined to get this team together, and Robin doesn't even know who he's going to be talking to, but then he recognizes his friend's voice. It's Wally West, and as soon as Robin says the word Teen Titans, Wally's like, "Say no more, count me out." So we see a little bit of change here without any kind of explanation. They've gone from Wally being planning to continue his career through college to just being done altogether. And it's kind of a necessary change for where Wolfman's going to take things dramatically, and it's not unreasonable to just assume that he's changed his mind. He's going to end a little sooner than he had planned. So he tells Robin he's quit the superhero biz, and even though Robin's left college, he's going to still be going and full time focused on his studies. Robin didn't even decide to call him, so he says, "Okay, well, no problem," and tells Raven, "You heard the man, it's a no go." And she says, "You did all I expected, Robin. I will handle Kid Flash now. And but you must find Wonder Girl." And so she disappears without further notice, and so that'll have some interesting repercussions for Kid Flash for quite a while. And while Robin goes off and finds Wonder Girl, Beast Boy's there as well. They have a little bit of a reunion as such, Gar tells them he wants to be called Changeling now. So the Beast Boy.
Sorry.
That's okay. And so then Kid Flash shows up again. And he's all costumed up. And Robin's surprised to see him because, you know, they just had a conversation. He's not interested anymore. So, and Robin asks him about it. And he really doesn't give much explanation. He just says, I'm in now. You know, do you tell the others what's going on? And so the Titans are four at this point. And Wally suddenly is all about it with no explanation. We can assume maybe Raven's done something. But the next we see her, she's with Cyborg. And she recruits him as the, well, I should have said that the Titans were five with Raven. And so now they are six with Cyborg. And so the seventh member will come along, and their first battle really involves this last member, as these green-skinned, reptilian-looking beings are attacking the United Nation. So the team goes into action, and while nearby, Starfire, their final member, has fallen into or been picked up and brought to an apartment of a young man named Grant and his girlfriend. And this girlfriend of his, given how Starfire looks, is not all that excited about this, her boyfriend having brought Starfire in. She's speaking a strange language, and so they're having a bit of a fight about it when these green-skinned aliens track Starfire down. They're the ones that are pursuing her in the prologue and attack their apartment. So Raven shows up in the apartment. The battle basically kind of spills into this apartment where this Grant and his girlfriend are, and naturally cause quite a bit of destruction. And it's about to spill back out into the outdoors again when Grant grabs Robin by the arm and says, "Hey, you guys busted up my place. What are you going to do about it?" And Robin says, "Hey, you'll be compensated. Now take your hand off me." And his Grant's girlfriend's not much help, but she says it's his fault. He's the one that brought the girl there in the first place. But we see Grant Wilson. He's not all that happy of a camper, and he's got some rage building up inside him. We'll see some more of that later. But when all is said and done, Raven, Starfire is rescued. But the last thing really I want to note about this issue is just that we see some real peculiar behavior from Kid Flash. If you read these before, you know what's coming, but when Raven, she's kind of been coming and going without a lot of explanations. She's bringing this team together, but she's not telling them a lot. She'll just kind of like Batman disappear in the middle of someone else's sentence. And fairly naturally, or understandably, Robin complains about this, and Kid Flash really sharply responds to that. "She's doing her job, Robin. Why don't you do yours and quit complaining?" So that's sort of odd behavior for Kid Flash to display, since none of them, including him, knows Raven very well, and it's not really like him in the first place. And furthermore, when Donna says something just about how Raven really hasn't explained anything and why they're fighting to recruit this other person, this alien woman, Kid Flash says basically it's good enough for him if Raven has a reason. He doesn't need to even know what it is. So it's pretty suspicious behavior on his part. But they do rescue Starfire, and the last couple panels of the issue take us into issue two. And as Raven tells the rest of the team that they weren't assembled simply to rescue Starfire, that there's a menace that's growing, one that only their powers can hope to overcome. We'll see more of that later on in the series, Raven's real reason for getting the team together. But also in the background, leading more directly into the next issue, we see Grant Wilson, the disgruntled young man whose apartment got ruined. And he's talking to someone off panel, telling them these are the heroes that he told them about. And the voice off panel tells them, "You want them destroyed? Very well, the Hive shall see that your wishes become reality." So, ominous ending leads us into issue two, which happens to be the first appearance of Deathstroke the Terminator.
That's an expensive book.
Yeah, I did not get this one off the spinner rack for 50 cents either. There's actually some of the few issues in my collection that actually have value.
Yeah.
Just because they're such important issues to me. You know, I wanted to own them. And they've been going up in value just as, you know, as Cyborg becomes more prominent. And like you said, because this issue, because it's probably of the three, the most valued because of Deathstroke's first appearance. And yeah, he pretty much shows up page one. We see Deathstroke the Terminator talking to Hive, members of Hive, which is an acronym, the purple cloaked beings. And he says, "Let's cut this garbage. Who do you want me to kill?" So they're hiring him to take out the new Teen Titans. And
I think I'm going to follow along. I have that issue in a box that I need to take to the basement.
Nice.
Right now.
Sounds good. Yeah, well, that was one of the other things, like bringing the project here is, you know, you can also chime in and stuff as we go. But yeah, meanwhile, Grant and his girlfriend, those things are getting worse. Their relationship, basically his girlfriend is leaving him because of like how angry he's getting and the way that he's, some little bit of time has passed and she's noticed that he's been hanging out with some unsavory characters and, she's pretty much had enough. And he grabs her by the arm kind of forcefully and then suddenly gets blasted across the room. And it turns out that Starfire and Donna Troy are around. And Starfire still is not speaking English. And she sees Grant take his girlfriend forcefully by the arm and just kind of reacts. So he takes off. Kid Flash shows up and tells them that they've got an emergency, so it's off to that. And they join up with the rest of the Titans. It's been about a week since the team came together, and they're dealing with some criminals down at some nearby docks. But the communication issue is solved in an interesting fashion as in the aftermath of this battle. Robin's remarking on the fact that it would be much easier if they could understand each other. And Starfire gives him kind of an interesting look and then grabs him and gives him a deep kiss. The Teen Wonders protest ends quickly. And Beast Boy's a bit jealous, or Changeling, excuse me, Gar. And all of a sudden, Starfire can speak English. "Hi, Robin, you know, you're really cute." And physical contact, she's able to absorb the English language from Robin, and turns out She didn't actually have to kiss him specifically, but according to her, it was certainly more enjoyable that way. And Gar, of course, he's nearby. He's willing to teach her French or some German.
There's some big, that's a Big Mac kiss, man.
It is definitely
Because
a
there's like serious tongue action.
yes.
And Dick's eyes are like, wow.
Whoa.
She like throws him on the floor.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, the next panel you can see he's like on his back and he's covered in curly red locks. His one bare leg is
So
up in the
this
air.
just goes to show that people freaking out about the new 52 is ridiculous, I
No,
think.
yeah.
And even later you see her naked. I mean, not in the comic book, but it's implied because she's changing to her bikini.
Right,
So
and
it's
she
like
doesn't understand the need
she's
for the.
used, yeah, she's used in a very sexual way in this book. And
Yeah.
this is very fucking early on.
Right. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people that reacted to her depiction,
They
really
don't
were
re
not familiar with the
yeah, they
character,
don't.
besides maybe from the cartoon or something, which is not fair.
Yeah, the cartoon, yeah.
So.
Titans Go. I mean, Jesus Christ.
Right.
That's a big
Big jump.
jump.
Yeah. But so we see the two plots kind of come together as this is going on. We see that Deathstroke is stalking them from existence, and we're introduced to his partner Wintergreen as well. And then also meanwhile, we see that Grant Wilson is submitting himself to some kind of procedure. And also meanwhile, we see Raven for the first time and another realm that she visits. It'll become familiar to us as to the place where she goes, where her father, who not have been introduced to yet, is where she communicates with him. And she has kind of a bad interaction here. And our next jump is to Blue Valley, which is a familiar place to us on when we anyone listened to From Kid to Flash, hometown of Wally West.
I just want to point out a thing about this this conversation with Raven.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's kind of weird because it's one of those things like she's talking to her father, right? And he's like, "I do
Right.
not forgive, speak, blah blah blah." Is this the first appearance of Trigon, or is it later on in issue 5? That's the big
Yeah.
question because.
Right. That's one of those things
Yeah,
that.
you see his eyeballs here and stuff. You just don't see his definition.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's certainly not the only character where you have like sort of a partial appearance or a cameo
Yeah, it's
before.
like Venom, right? The first
Right.
appearance of Venom is like
Yeah, good
nothing.
example. Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, I don't have to be too mysterious about it because everybody knows that her father is Trigon, and that's, and like you said, you don't see, but and the reason she kind of ends up in bad condition from this interaction is because he sort of blasts her. So they have a rather tumultuous relationship, to say the least. And so when Wally gets back to his house, he's thinking to himself, you know, he doesn't really remember why he decided to become the Kid Flash again. You know, he's had enough time, I guess, now to sort of start to question what the hell's going on. When he gets back to his room, he finds Raven there laying in his bed. And she says, "I'm sorry to have intruded, Wallace. I should not have come here." It's kind of an interesting thing where she's like the only character that consistently calls him Wallace instead of Wally, which I think is a kind of a nice touch. It sort of speaks to her demeanor. It's very serious. But I needed a sanctuary, if only for. And while he starts to take her into his arms, but she says, "No, I've already said too much. Raven, please don't disappear on me. I have to ask you." But and then once again, Raven just disappears. And well, we see that while he is on to something, where he wants to ask her if she's the reason that he changed his mind to become a Titan again. But that answer will have to wait. As you said, we, as you mentioned, we have a scene at the mansion where Changeling lives, and the other Titans are hanging out. It's a little bit of a swimming pool scene, and yeah, the swimwear that Donna and Starfire get are. It's the swimwear that Beast Boy had around, and no surprise, given Beast Boy, their bikinis, and where, as Donna's like, you know, this is pretty small. Starfire, we see, is like, I don't even understand why I have to wear this. It can't be for protection. Does it possess any special properties?
I love it because this just drives the point home.
Yeah.
Like, you could take pictures of this and just, you know, tell them people, well, look at this.
Right.
There's no difference. It might be differently depicted in art or something, but the character's foundation is very similar. She's alien. She doesn't know why the fuck they're wearing these clothes, you know?
Exactly, yeah. She's like, I don't. What's the point of this? Because obviously it's not protecting me. Is there something magical about it, basically, she's saying? Because why bother wearing it? It's just covering, like, little parts of my body. Donna says, yeah, it does have specialty properties. Basically, it'll keep the guys from going insane when they see you. So, but Kid Flash shows up, but then Cyborg's not there because he's in Star Labs, and we get to see a little bit more about him and his interaction with his father, how he's angry at his father for turning him into Cyborg when a fellow who looks quite a bit like Deathstroke but is not Deathstroke shows up. It's Grant Wilson, and the first Ravager. So they have a bit of a one-on-one. Grant is pretty inexperienced, so Cyborg uses his sound weapon, and Deathstroke has to show up and throws Ravager over his shoulder and takes him with him, gets him out of there. So we're back at the pool, and Cyborg shows up to alert them to what's going on. We see Deathstroke has taken Ravager back to his place. Doesn't reveal the connection that there is between the two of them. He's basically tries to tell Ravager, like, look, you've gone through this special process where the brain capacity has been increased, but if you use your powers, you're going to kill yourself. Grant wants nothing to do with it. He's like, you know, my dad used to say that you were the best hitman in the country, but I've taken an assignment to destroy the Teen Titans, so I'm not going to fail. And he takes off. And pretty quickly comes upon them. He's going to try to take on the whole team himself, but Deathstroke's followed him, he's going to help him out. So we had the battle between the team. There's nothing too significant in terms of what Wally does. The battle ends pretty abruptly when Ravager gets sick and falls down. Terminator's like, you know, I didn't think it was going to happen too quickly. They think maybe, you know, they know that Starfire shot a blast near him, but it didn't hit him. It's just struck the wall near him, and Raven appears. She hasn't been around. Like, where the heck have you been? But she just tells them, she's been basically, what it comes down to is she's been focused on investigating stuff with Trigon and stuff, because that's the reason they're really been brought together by her. But long and short of it is that Ravager, his face looks like that of an old man. The process that he went under, that Hive put him under, basically sapped his body real fast of his life, and he's dying. And it's a pretty heartfelt moment. I think it kind of foreshadows some of the complexity of Deathstroke's character, that makes him interesting, that you see here. Grant asks Deathstroke if they killed the Titans, and we see an interesting thing from Raven's perspective too, where she actually shows him an illusion of all the Titans defeated. She takes pity on Grant, basically, so that the last thing he sees is that he was successful, even though he was anything but. And but we have the rivalry begin here as well with Deathstroke. He blames them for Grant being killed, and they're like, we didn't do that. But he says, in my line of business, you take a contract, and the contract he took was the reason that he got killed. So they let them go. Raven's kind of the one that really wants it to happen, because she wants to show compassion. And but the epilogue kind of reveals why this is such a big deal. That we see Grant, we see, or rather, we see the Terminator for the first time without his mask, and he's there with Wintergreen in the cemetery, watching Grant's girlfriend stand before his grave. And we find out that Deathstroke was actually Grant's father. And then the last bit is with the Hive, watching from a distance on a monitor this going on, and talking about the fact that Grant's not, or that rather that Slade is not going to be happy with them either. And they said, well, that's not the point. It's, the job or whatever. But anyways, that's more than enough for this installment here. And we see Wally kind of, we have a bit of a mystery about what's going on with him and Raven, and it's definitely a big new step for his life. This bit with Raven is gonna really kind of be the new status quo for now, and really gonna have a strong impact on him and this new team. And it's just an interesting way to bring him onto the team without, with kind of preserving his original intentions to be to give up being a superhero, but get him back into the superhero game, basically against his will. And we'll see down the road what kind of ramifications that has. So that is that for now. But do you have anything else you wanted to add to those?
Yeah, it has a cartoon ad here for the Happy Days Gang cartoon, which was, I don't remember this. They were in a spaceship, so I must have not watched it. I did watch
Yeah,
Richie
that's.
Rich and the Super Friends, of course, and I sometimes watch Scooby and Scrabby-Doo, even though I didn't like it that much, because I like classic Scooby-Doo. And then they had Heathcliff and Dingbat, and then Plastic Man. Now I like that cartoon. And Thunder the Barbarian. So I watched a lot of ABC TV cartoons back then, because I think I started with Super Friends, and then I might have changed the channel and come back for Plastic Man and Thunder.
Hey, it's me, the Fonz. Now catch my new show and my new friends every Saturday morning on ABC.
Yeah,
It's a
and
pretty
then
cool ad.
another interesting thing is on the back cover, we have O.J. Simpson
Oh, yeah.
advertising dingo boots.
Yeah, there you go.
So that's an interesting thing, being that he killed his wife
Yeah, at least I guess
with
it's
the
good
glove.
it's boots instead of gloves.
Yeah, do these boots fit?
Yeah.
So,
Kids, get your free autographed photo of me, OJ. Mail to OJ Dingo.
I'm gonna be brief on my review, and it's for because
Because
if you
I took
notice,
such a long ass
well,
time.
no, it's because if I try to stream a lot of words, I lose my voice or start coughing.
Yeah,
And when
so
I'm
kind of.
talking, when you're talking, it's different because I could go on mute like I didn't that one time, but
Right.
I could catch it.
Yeah, you're still kind of recovering
Yeah, I'm
the.
still kind of recovering, so I'm going to talk about Saga of the Swamp Thing, which I kind of mentioned. Numbers 20 through 27. And this has been a really cool series because the first Alan Moore issue was really kind of jarring. It was actually when they hired him to complete the last issue of a battle between Swamp Thing and Arcane. And this was like what you believe to be the death of Arcane. And it has to do with the ship crashing and all kinds of other stuff. And he kind of did a pretty good job coming in there. I guess not with his flair or trying to keep the initial tone of the story so he could complete it. And it was kind of jarring as a first issue of the Alan Moore, start to not see Alan Moore start with a clean story arc. He just
Yeah.
finished an existing one. And then he gets into the Sutherland Corporation, which they call him General Sutherland. I guess he's a retired general. And he's like infatuated with capturing the Swamp Thing. Like he knows his origin. And he wants to capture him and have a doctor recreate the formula and all that stuff. And it gets really interesting because he hires the guy Woodrow, who's the feet, I can't pronounce it, the Floronic Man. He,
I
the
think that's right.
Floronic Man was he's been around for a while. I think he created Poison Ivy. He also has links to the Millennium, where I think they had
All right.
the team that formed. He was one of the guys that actually was granted the powers. They called him the New Guardians
Right.
because the Guardians kind of went off to fuck the Zamorians.
Exactly, yeah.
So they had the Guardians, which is an oddball group of teams. Most of them were characters we hadn't seen before, but we have seen the Floronic Man, and he was one of them. But here in Swamp Thing, he's a guy that's hired, like as a professor. He is hired to reverse engineer the Swamp Thing and find out more about him. And he actually finds out, like what he believes his origin to be scientifically, and he's like. He is no longer Alec Holland. He is a plant that thinks he's Alec Holland, which is very interesting because I didn't read this one before. I read some of the issues, but I didn't read this one issue before. Is it really defines that Swamp Thing isn't Alec Holland. He thinks he's Alec Holland. It's like that plants learn, and the plants absorbed Alec Holland's memories and stuff. So he thought he was Alec Holland, but he was not. He was
Yeah.
actually the plant. And he tells Sutherland this, and Sutherland's like, "You fucking, I hired you to do X, Y, and Z, and you give me this bullshit." He says, "You're fired." Well, that was a bad thing happening because Floronic Man took some of the stuff that he learned and he also freed Swamp Thing for the most part. which he was captured for the corporation to do with whatever they wanted. So Swamp Thing got his revenge. Floronic Man became all powerful. And there is a one issue arc where Alan Moore goes off on his, you could see, you know, how he feels about superheroes early on, because he's like, here are these gods in the satellite watching over us. And, you know, they have power over us as humans and all this stuff. And he's using his, you can see why he writes The Watchmen and how he feels about superheroes, mm-hmm. you know, in this book here, which is very interesting. But Floronic Man becomes all powerful, and he's actually killing people left and right, especially in this small town. And the Justice League can't do anything to stop him. So it actually comes to Swamp Thing that's able to do it and stop him. But you get a brief glimpse of the satellite era Justice League and how Alan Moore feels about them. And then you get into a small story arc with the demon. And here's where I think Alan Moore's genius started to... Well, it started with the Justice League, but he started to talk about Jason Blood. It was a three-issue arc where Jason Blood's in the story arc. And the way he introduced him was amazing, because it was all Jason Blood. But what was really cool about it is he could, like, see the future, and he like knew things. He knew like Abby Cable had to save these kids from this demon thing, and he knew when he'd run into people, he was like, you're gonna die by swordfish. And you're like, what the fuck, this guy's gonna die by a swordfish? And he's like, you're gonna get in a fight with your wife about patio furniture, you're gonna die by a swordfish. And he was, like, predicting stuff. He was predicting stuff. And Harley was bringing in a lot of grass, but I don't think it was a lot of grass. Sorry about
was that. Was that the grass that she got with her bark box?
No, it wasn't her hippie grass.
Oh, okay.
So
I know how you guys do that out in Colorado.
I might lose my voice very, very quickly, but I just love the way he wrote Jason Blood. Like I got so into that story, and just the order in which he told the story was really fascinating, and it ends up with a battle with Swamp Thing and the demon working together, which I really enjoyed. But that was like the first story arc, issues 20 through 27 of Swamp Thing. And it was awesome. And I do want to read the next volume of it, because I have these guys and this one was a particular trade, but I have, for some reason, I have volume 2, 3, 4, 5, all in hardcover. So I couldn't buy the hardcover easily for cheap.
Yeah.
So I realized I was cleaning my bookshelves, and I was like, where the fuck? I don't have that issue, but I have everything else. So I just went on eBay and bought the trade, and I read it while I was on the business trip. It was something easy to take and enjoy.
Yeah, trades travel well.
Yeah. And I didn't read a lot because I was pretty doggone sick.
Yeah. I hear you.
But some of the art is Dan Day did like the first one. They all have similar styles, and then Steve Bissett did the art on most of the rest of them. Actually, all of them. Except for that closing arc that Alan Moore finished up. So you got a lot, the Floronic Man. You got Sutherland, which was an interesting character. And You got the Demon for sure. You got the Justice League. So you got a lot of the DCU in these early issues.
Yeah.
Which eventually became a Vertigo title.
Right. But yeah, it's an interesting time period where they still were part of the DC universe. Because you could kind of have that interaction.
And it was an interesting prologue, or you know, when the author writes something right before the book, they had Len Wein, who's the creator of Swamp Thing, write about how he got Alan Moore to do the work. Mm-hmm. And he was amazed by what he got. But the thing that I found interesting is that when him and Bernie Wrightson created Swamp Thing, it was slightly very, very different. And I do own the House of Mystery that's the first appearance of the Swamp Thing. And they had no intent. They pretty much did this issue as a done-in-one, you know, like a done-in-one horror story. But for that particular month, it was the best-selling DC comic.
Oh, interesting.
And because of that, they asked Len Wein and them to come back and do the Swamp Thing, the 20-cent version of the ongoing. And yeah. They had changed a few things around and stuff, but they had like no intent of ever continuing this one shot. But it sold so well and was popular with the fans. And there's a lot to say for Swamp Thing. I mean, he's such an odd character, but it spawned like 2-3 movies, which had some success, especially the first one, and it spawned a TV show. And its own toy line, like the Swamp Thing, you wouldn't think would have his own toy line. But I actually own a lot of the Swamp Thing toys, and it's like Arcane Monsters and Glow-in-the-Dark Swamp Thing, Swampy Swamp Thing, and Tree Swamp Thing, and a bunch of others. So he's had quite a bit of early success, you know, when a lot of the comic characters for DC would not be able to break into comics. And it came after, you know, like Wonder Woman and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I mean, it kind of does have that significance, that time. They only had a handful of, you know, crossover success, if you want to call it that, you know.
Yeah, and I remember the actor that played Arcane in the TV show had the same name as the guy who killed John Lennon. So that was kind of an interesting fact. Chapman.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't realize that. All right, so next thing I want to talk about is pretty different. Let's bring it up here. There's a, you know, the Humble Bundles that they do. You can, like, it goes to charity and you could spend like $20 or something like that. They change every couple of weeks or something like that, and sometimes they have comic bundles. And there's right now the one going on is Image Comics one, and it's got a lot of newer stuff naturally, but there's a couple things in it that were a little older. And one of the things that's included is the collection that they did of all the original Stray Bullets, the David Latham series. So I've been wanting to read that for a while. So I've read Young Liars and Dan the Unharmable and stuff, some other stuff by David Latham, and I like his writing. And Stray Bullets is...
Those are great series, by the way.
Yeah. He's very, you know, he writes very different ideas and stuff. And Stray Bullets is kind of like Ed Brubaker's Criminal, where you had different storylines with different characters, and it was a self-published thing for like 40 issues. Just kind of came out intermittently over the years, and then more recently he was able to bring it to Image and get it going again, and they republished all the older stuff in this omnibus. And so just going to talk about the first issue of the series called The Look of Love, which takes on a very interesting meaning as you go through the issue. But it's drawn in black and white by Laugham as well, and I also enjoy his art.
What was this issue again?
Issue number one.
Of what?
Stray Bullets.
Stray Bullets. Oh, this is great.
Yeah.
Did you get the whole...
Good
in
stuff.
That package, did you get the whole... What do they call it? You know how they came out with the
yeah,
El Capitan Omnibus thing?
Did, yeah.
Is that what came with it?
Yep. It's called the Uber Alleys
okay, yeah,
edition.
Yeah,
it's like
I actually bought that, and I read the first, I don't know, 10 issues, so I know where you're coming from.
Yeah, I think it's like the first, I think it's like 41 issues or something.
Yeah, it's a big trade. I mean, it's huge.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
you have the digital version of it.
Digital, yeah, but I was looking at the table of contents, and I'm like, whoa, this thing's like over 1,000 pages. I'm like, this must be huge in print. But
when you said the title, I was hacking away here, so I didn't hear a word you said.
Couldn't hear me over yourself. But, so yeah, it's done in a black and white, a lot of darks, very noir, and there's a caption that tells us it's taking place in the summer of '97, and it's a car driving down a dark road, gets a flat tire. We're introduced to the two characters of the issue, Joey and Frank. And Frank looks a little older than Joey. Joey's got a kind of a brush cut, looks like a younger guy. He's got big ears. And we pretty quickly kind of get the vibe of the interactions with them. As Joey's seems like he's a little bit simple, not real smart. What turns out to be more than just a flat tire, there's something more complicated going on. And Frank tells Joey, go in the trunk and get the spare, grab the jack and the tools. And then he looks up at him. Joey's just standing there. It's like, makes you wonder, why is he hesitating to go into the trunk? Until Frank says, Jesus, you act like you never seen a body before. So, yeah, sure enough, Joey opens the trunk, and in addition to a whole lot of other shit, there's a body wrapped up in a blanket. And Joey takes that out, and thud, the one end of it hits the pavement, and he hauls it off the side of the road, leaving a streak of blood on the pavement, which come into play later. So, yeah, talk about a little bit before, you know, between them, a little bit of dialogue, and Laugham writes some really good dialogue. But things get a little creepier where they talk about this guy, Harry. And it seems like they maybe work for Harry. And Joey's not real happy with what Harry did. It seems like Harry is probably the one that killed the body. Turns out to be a girl. Frank says, you know, what the fuck's wrong with you? She was Harry's girl. He can do whatever the hell he wants with her. Anyway, you should thank Harry for letting you get those freebies before he done it. So, yeah, some things get a little worse as, for not for the first time, we get the implication that Harry let Joey have sex with the girl. So unfortunately for these two criminals, the cop car shows up. Frank tries to play it cool, you know, just flat tire and all that stuff, but we see the cop shines a light on the back seat, and it's just like filled with empty beer cans and stuff, and tries to say that Joey was the one that got drunk and when they were just hanging out, so he was going to take Joey's off in the woods right now, taking a leak. So Frank pretends that he's by himself. He says, you know, my friend just got a little drunk, so I took him home. Ask for license registration, and we see that when Frank goes in the glove compartment, that there is a gun in there. So Frank works on the spare while the cop goes and checks out the information. The cop's going to let him go, watch it with the alcohol, et cetera, et cetera. And, but as the cop starts walking back towards his car, he sees the blood on the pavement from Joey dragging the body off. And so the cop looks into the woods nearby and sees Joey standing near one of the trees. Don't look, you bastard. Blam, blam. Joey kills the cop. He's screaming, he saw her, you saw, he saw, you saw, you saw. And he's just like out of bullets, but click, click, click. He's still firing the gun at the cop. And so Frank calms him down. They get the cop into the trunk. And they have an interesting conversation on the road where we get a better sense of Joey. You know, he's scared that shooting the cop made him a bad man. And Frank, you know, he goes through this convoluted logic of how his old man was in the war, like Vietnam, or no, Korea. He was in Korea. You know, he killed people there, but he was protecting people. Came back and they gave him a medal. And so the cop, you know, if he'd caught them, it would have been a big problem, and they'd be in trouble. So Joey was protecting the country as well. So it's not real clear if Frank like actually follows this logic himself, or if he's just like taking advantage of the fact Joey's not too smart and giving him something that doesn't really make too much sense. But either way, Joey seems to be a little bit reassured by it, but also seems to be upset with what Harry did, and he keeps returning to that. But anyways, he still has to pee because he never actually went in the woods. So he asks him to stop, and they stop at a diner. And while Harry's out filling the while Frank's out filling the tank. Joey goes to the bathroom, and he's walking back out of the diner. He looks through the window, and he sees what he thinks is the trunk of their car being opened. And so he freaks out, pulls out his gun, and he walks out. We see that Frank and this other guy, they're just having a fun conversation. Frank's telling a joke. But Joey comes running out, and he just goes crazy, opens fire on the other guy, kills him. Another guy what works at the gas station tries to make a run for it, and Joey shoots him in the back and kills him. He's like, calm down, we need to get out of here. Tells Joey wasn't even the right car. The trunk that he saw opened up wasn't even their car, so he killed these people for no reason. And he's like, we got to get out of here, Joey's. But instead of that, the owner of the diner comes out with a shotgun, takes a shot that blows out the window of one of their car. And Joey gets a little bit of buckshot across his shoulder, and they jump up at each other. They're both shooting blanks, or their guns aren't working. Joey's out of bullets. And the shotgun jammed. He manages to kill the guy, and he picks up the guy's shotgun. He goes into the diner and just starts opening fire. He basically kills every single person in the diner with the shotgun. And Frank's just like, holy crap, basically. But he's like, well, I guess we couldn't leave any witnesses. So things just get crazier and crazier. Basically, they load up their entire car with all these dead bodies. The trunk's full. They got dead bodies like piled up in the back seat. They're all bloody. There's not enough room for one of the women from the diner. So Joey actually pulls the dead body of the woman onto his lap. As they blow up the diner as they're driving away, It's getting later and later. It's like 4:30 in the morning, and Frank's kind of talking to himself. He looks a little drunk. He's like, "We just get rid of this car. All the evidence is in here." And he goes on this other story. He's talking about this guy who called himself the Lord Shepherd and some kind of missionary. He used to tell people if they would ask Jesus for forgiveness, even no matter what they did, if they said, you know, the God's forgiveness, boom, they go straight to heaven. But they found out that this guy, he killed like 18 people, and he'd kill them because he would kill them when they were free of sin, and so he could send them to heaven. Well, meanwhile, Joey's still fixated on what Harry did, how he killed that girl. And Joey's, like I said, pretty simple. It turns out that he thinks that he was going to get married to Harry's girlfriend that got killed because he had sex with her, and it was like the first time he had sex, and that they were in love. He was going to have his baby, all because he had sex with her. And Harry's like, come on, man. Every time you have sex with a girl doesn't mean she's going to have a baby. And he finds out, you know, that Joey had never had sex. He's like, man, I would have fixed you up years ago if I would have known that. And he was like, when we get home, and Joey interrupts him and says, I can't do that. I'd be cheating. And Joey's just like fed up at this point. He's like, we're going to die because you think you're in love with some dead bitch. He's like, you stupid. I'll show you. He's like, we got a trunk full of dead bodies here. And so then he's just gets worse and worse. He calls the girl that Harry's girlfriend a whore, and that's the last straw for Joey. Actually shoots Frank in the head. He's, watch your mouth in front of her, Frank. So pretty much everybody's dead besides Joey. And he talks to the body for a little while about, you know, how people shouldn't treat women that way, and he shouldn't listen to Frank because he treats his wife real bad. And so the story ends. It's 6:30 in the morning, and Joey says goodbye to the body, and he leaves behind this car just full with spilling out of dead bodies, and Frank's dead body next to it, his head blown off. And Joey just stalks off into the woods. Harry shouldn't have done it. I'll make him pay. You'll see. He's got, you know, bleeding from the on his shoulder from the buckshot, and he's got the one gun with him. So that is the end of for now. But yeah, pretty crazy story. Really enjoyed it. The artwork and just the dialogue. You know, it's kind of takes like a simple plot with like the crime story and kind of really elevates with just the dialogue that he's able to write, these conversations, really getting kind of the character's voice.
That all wasn't one issue, right?
I think so, unless they combine them.
I don't know.
Yeah, because it was about 20-something. It was about 20-something pages.
Oh, okay. Just a lot of happened in that issue. I remember reading the first 10 or so issues, and I thought it was like 5.
Yeah, a lot does happen, and it doesn't feel rushed, though. And
no, it doesn't.
It's really, but yeah, if it's...
Well, all the characters are, like, awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty impressive writing and art. You know.
That poor guy's so naive.
Yeah, very much so. Not very smart and very naive. Bad combination. But,
Seems like what he does is he kind of, like, rolls with it. Like, the ending of one links to something of another kind of thing going on.
Right.
But the story could go a whole different way, which is interesting.
Yeah, you don't necessarily know, you know, it's not necessarily going to just pick up right in the next issue with Joey, you know. Yeah. Kind of moves around and stuff, so. Pretty cool. Definitely looking forward to reading some more.
He's got a current title coming out right now. I don't know if you knew.
Yeah, he's like continuing.
Yeah.
Like doing miniseries of Stray Bullets.
Yeah. After that, I'm really glad. 1,000 pages or whatever.
Right, yeah. So eventually, maybe, but.
He's a very talented writer. I don't think I've read any Laugham that I didn't like.
Yeah.
He comes out of the Jim Shooter school, too. He worked a lot of Valiant stuff.
That's right, yeah.
Art and story.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a pretty talented artist,
and I think
too.
He followed Jim Shooter to, like, what is it called? Defiant.
Yeah, sounds right.
Sorry about that. I never know when I'm going to just hack up along here.
Yeah. No problem.
So, my next book that I'm going to talk about is Brave and the Bold 180. This is Batman and the Spectre, written by Mike Fleshner with art by Jim Aparo. And I felt like reading a Spectre story, so that's why I chose this one.
Cool.
And I found that I was more interested in the backup story than I was in the this story. But it starts off with a security guard. He's working the late shift, and he's in the part of the museum that has all these antiques. And it creeps him out, this particular area of Japanese history, because it's a real dark part of the museum, and a lot of the crates haven't even been exposed yet. And he runs into this urn, and he opens this box, and it kind of wakes up this samurai armor, and it actually kills him. And here's the weird thing, is just Batman happens to be in the museum, like crashing through a window. Like, I don't understand how the hell he even knew to go to the museum. But he says, sounded like he heard a scream and he was near the museum, jumps into the window and sees the samurai warrior slash and killed that security guard. He fights the samurai warrior, and then the curator of the museum comes and says, "What's going on?" And he says, "Yeah, I fought this guy. I captured him. I'll call the cops." But he realizes the armor is empty. And then the curator says, "Oh, do you realize what happened? You just freed the dragon god." And it was basically these two brothers. One was evil and one was good. And they fought each other. And when they dissipated each other, they separated these three things of the scepter into three different parts and separated them across the world so they'd never be reunited again. And this dark god is actually out looking to join the scepter again and get power. And that's where he runs into Jim Corrigan at like a fundraiser where the other scepter is. And it's funny because the Japanese god is listening to the curator kind of tell him where everything is. So he's like, "Oh yeah, I need to go here. I need to go here." Because the curator says, "There's no way he'll find the pieces, because they're all the way, you know, they're separated across the world." And he manages to do that, and Corrigan ends up getting into it and fighting him. He kind of gets his ass kicked once he gets the third piece of the scepter. Corrigan realizes that the specter realizes that his power set is really high when he has the scepter, but Batman uses a batarang to knock the scepter out of his hands, and that's where he dissipates into dust. And because he was killing the Spectre when it happened, the Spectre said, "One day I will repay you for saving me." And so he like owes Batman a huge favor. But what was really interesting is the Nemesis story. I like Nemesis. He's a character that he's a spy that can change faces and stuff like that. He's had some DC books recently, coming out of Final Crisis. But he was also in the Suicide Squad, going back to Ostrander, and he was featured a lot, I think, in the backups of this book and other books. So this one, he's actually at his home with his wife or whoever the woman he is that lives with him, doesn't really say. But he's got this device strapped to his chest, and it's continued from the previous issue, and his wife is knocking on the door, "Let me in, let me in." And this thing is basically going to blow up his heart. It's going to trigger, and it could kill him. And it shows the guy that put this contraption on him because he had captured Nemesis. And what Nemesis' goal is to find the guy who invented the contraption and disable the contraption before it goes off. And the reason it hasn't gone off is because the guy who put the contraption on him thinks that he died already, or else he could have killed Nemesis just like that. So he uses this pimp guy, like this guy that's in this organization, to his like Huggy Bear to find out where this professor is. And he gets to the where the professor is, and the guy sets off the device, and it looks like he's gonna die, and it says to be continued. But that story was written by Carrie Burkett, and
Okay,
the
yeah.
Carrie Burkett, and the art was by Dan Spiegel, which is currently the guy who created the character that's on my wall right now as my Facebook page. The commission I had, he had created that character, the Blackhawk character,
Oh,
that I
nice.
got. Yeah, so that was Batman and the Spectre.
Nice.
I have an impressive Brave and the Bold collection. I was gonna go to 73 and stop 1973, but I've been going back to the 10-cent and 12-cent issues, so it's getting pretty deep.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was kind of curious if you have the issues to continue the backstory.
I do.
That's cool. That's
So
good.
I could go finish it. I could read what happened before and what happened after. 'Cause most of the Brave and Bolds are done, done in one. But
Yeah.
the backup is like a 8-page extra story.
That's cool. Oh, I just had a one more comic book to talk about. In the early 90s, they brought back the Justice Society of America. There was the JSA series that ran for a long time. But this, before they did that, there was a couple series that came out post All-Star Squadron and end of the JSA and all that. There was this mini series, which is an 8-issue mini series that came out in 91, and then in 93 they did another Justice Society of America series that was gonna be ongoing, but then got canceled after 10 issues. So I read issue one of the 1991 miniseries. This actually takes place back in the day. It takes place back in the 50s. So at the time it wasn't bringing the team to the present day DC universe or anything. It was just a untold tale kind of deal. And this first issue is called Beware the Savage Skies, written by Len Strazuski, with art by Rick Burchett, pencils and inks, colors by Tom Ziusko.
What is the name of the title though? Like officially inside of the inner page?
You mean of it's Vengeance from the Stars, Chapter One.
No,
Beware the
I guess
Savage
what I'm trying to
Skies.
find it in my database and
Oh,
I
the
can't find
indices,
it.
it's spelled out Justice Society of America.
'Cause I see the Len Straczynski Mike Parabek one, which is the 92-93. I don't see the other one.
This would be one of eight.
Huh.
And
Oh, I see why it's listed as a mini series.
yeah, it is.
Okay.
This one was planned as a mini series, whereas that other one you're looking at initially was going to be an ongoing that got canceled.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It
I
has
found it.
what they did with these is they have different character featured on the cover. This is featuring the Flash, Jay Garrick, of course. And but it starts out with a different Justice Society member at the opening of a new Mount Pride Observatory in New Mexico. And very young Mike Myers is there in the crowd. You're
That's
around in the
right.
1950s, right?
Yeah, I've been around. I got my super soldier serum.
Go, and you're frozen in ice for a while. That's why
Yeah,
you're
I was
there.
frozen in the 60s. I
The
fell
ice.
off a rocket plane into some ice cold water.
There you go. So, but there's a guy, and speaking of hippies, rather old looking hippie guy. He's got long white hair, and everyone's looking. I mean, he wouldn't be a hippie because it's too early for that, but everyone's, looking pretty dapper. Men are wearing their suits and hats. Women are wearing their dresses. So he really kind of stands out in this crowd, and he's yelling about the end is near, blasphemy, the savage skies. Policeman comes up to kind of take a hold of him, get him out of the way, but on stage is Ted Knight. In his civilian identity. People may know him as Starman. But he says, wait, hold on. Let the man talk. What's the problem, old timer? He says, problem? The end of the world is not a problem. It's the end of everything. It's total destruction. We're creating our own doom. We must repent. And so Ted says, well, considering the A-bomb and all, I can't say I disagree. But I haven't seen anything out in the skies that would scare me. So before the man is taken away, he is able to hand a star chart to Ted. So then Ted goes back, well, sorry about the interruption, etc. But then later on that night, he goes back to the observatory, and Ted Knight, he takes a star chart, which he actually found kind of interesting. Because very old, and he uses it to guide him in his observation of the stars at the observatory, and he's sees a rather unusual formation of stars, and he ends up taking a look at it and seeing that looks like a woman. Then he's very surprised to see what seems like the constellation actually coming towards him. The woman's face fills, still made up of stars, comes toward the telescope, and then crashes, something at least crashes into it. So fast forward a week later, and we Jay Garrick is coming to see Ted Knight, who's given him was actually just hanging up the phone from having called him because he's the fastest man alive, and sped right over. And so Ted tells him, last week I saw something in space and it made some kind of contact with me, and it caused all this damage here that you see, because as the Flash was speeding into the scene, we can. If you take a look, there's actually some signs saying that the observatory is closed for repairs. And meanwhile, there's also been some destruction around of different power stations all around the West Coast. And Jay's heard about that. And even though the government's kind of trying to keep it under wraps, so people don't panic. And Ted tells him that he thinks that this being that came through could probably be found at the Boulder Dam. So, Jay's like, "All right, well, let's head out there, buddy." And we see for the first time that Ted's in a wheelchair. And Ted says, "I'm sorry to say that I think I'm out of the mystery man business forever. That thing that came through the telescope got me pretty good." But when Jay takes off, we see that there is a shadowy figure who tells Ted that he did well. You sent Flash to his doom, and doesn't seem that Ted's in on it, that he's being coerced, because he says, "Well, he's the Flash, and he's beaten you before." And the figure smacks him across the face, and tells some other figures that are in the shadows to punish him. So a little bit of mystery going on there, but meanwhile, Jay heads over to the Boulder Dam and tries to make contact with the people working there. And says they're not really having any problem at the moment, but he says, "Well, I've heard that you probably are going to," and they're like, "What the hell's going on here?" But sure enough, all of a sudden there's this burst of voltage, and this being takes sh shape out of the electricity. Looks kind of like a Olympic god of some sort. And so Flash goes to work trying to combat this being of electricity. Naturally has a little bit of difficulty. He's able to keep away from it, being the Flash, but takes him a little bit of time to sort of figure out, how am I going to subdue a creature? And eventually, some of the workers that are there help him out by bringing over a cable car. And Flash is able to use the speed to unwind it and wrap it around the being, and create kind of like an electric fence to conduct the electricity. So they try to short him out by those means. Meanwhile, we see that Ted is watching the goings on via the news on a TV, and he gets excited to see that the Flash is doing well. But the figure off screen says he's hardly beaten me. This is just the beginning of the game. And we see that one of the figures off screen is Solomon Grundy. He's the one that's kind of like pushing Ted around in his wheelchair. So back to the Flash, the figure actually changes form and turns into like this kind of demon dog sort of figure, and that is, it makes it, because its form has changed, it's able to get free of the ropes. It's causing a lot of destruction. Flash is trying to keep everybody safe at the same time. He's got a lot on his plate. And some police are on the scene by now. The dog is getting bigger as it sucks in more electricity and stuff. Flash is waylaid, unfortunately, because as he's just trying to take care of so much at once, the dog rips this big steel beam out, and throws it. Well, it's heading for a couple of the workers, so the Flash is able to speed up and knock the guys out of the way, but as a result, he gets smacked right against the back with this big, huge steel beam, and the issue ends ominously with the Flash, his helmet's fallen off next to him, and he's landed under this big, huge steel beam with this electric demon dog in the background. And because of all of the goings-ons there, a whole bunch of the grid goes down. A lot of places are out without electricity. It says to be continued next. Black Canary. She's the future character in the next issue. But yeah, fun story. I feel like it has like a storytelling style of the 90s, but stays true to kind of like the characterization of the characters being in the 50s. So it reads to like an 80s style of comics, but has that setting of the 50s. So I really like enjoy that combination. Same way that I, like if you enjoy the JSA series and stuff. Naturally, not just a fan of Wally West, I'm a fan of the Flashes in general. So I like seeing a young Jay Garrick here. And yeah, Rick Bruchette's art is really cool. I think it's a good choice for this issue. It's realistic, but it's kind of got like a little bit of a cartoony feel to it. There's just a touch of exaggeration to the eyes and the features and stuff like that gives it just a little bit of a cartoony feel that I really like. So, good stuff. And storytelling wise, it's very very clear what's going on. There's a lot of chaos at the scene of the Boulder Dam, but it never gets muddied up where you don't really know what's going on. So, yeah, I had a good time reading the issue.
Cool. And for my last one, I am going to go to Acclaim Comics. I want to talk about this was an imprint that a creator-owned imprint that Acclaim did towards the later part. Seems like when companies like Acclaim and CrossGen go into the creator print, they go out of business soon after. But they had their Windjammer, and CrossGen had their—I can't remember if it was called CGE or whatever—where they would start doing licensed properties and other stuff outside of their shared universe. But Acclaim did a lot of interesting things. They did a crime noir, with Grave Diggers and a couple others, and they did a Windjammer, which was their creator-owned property. Some of it was reprints. I've talked about the Star Slayer remastered editions, and this is a Mike Grell series called Bar Sinister with Rick Hoberg. It doesn't feature Mike Grell. This is a Mike Grell created concept, but it's not Mike Grell art, which is very weird. I think Rick Hoberg worked with Mike Grell, though, a lot on the Green Arrow series. His name sounds familiar when Mike Grell was the writer and artist, and sometimes he had other artists do it. He does have a kind of an art style that's, I don't know, it's sort of similar to Mike Grell. It's just not Mike Grell. But this is very much in the vein of Swamp Thing. I didn't know what to expect when I read this because I've never read it before. But it is a bunch of this corporation, much like we had that Sutherland Corporation and Swamp Thing. This corporation is genetically creating these creatures that are half human and half animal. And a lot of them broke out, and that's what this group is they're outcasts, and then now they're being hunted by a corporation that doesn't want them around anymore, and also humanity is hunting them down. But they have various powers, like part of them, one is like a guy with merged with a lion, and a woman merged with a bat, stuff like that. And this is kind of like the setting foundation. Like, it's a weird way to introduce the characters because you very seldom see them in action in this book, but there you see them getting attacked a little bit, and you see them doing stuff. But the way they get introduced is via like a who's who thing. In other words, the corporation that's going after them are looking at their cards and they're saying, okay, this is Docket. Here's his abilities. This is Signet. Here's her abilities. This is Tartan. His abilities, and it gives all the statistics on their abilities. So it's an interesting way to tell the story, as it feels like a who's who kind of thing. But the characters that are going after this Bar Sinister group are looking at the actual cards. But that's all there is with this. It's pretty much just a monster book where these hybrids, much like a Blade Runners, Blade Runner, they have the replicants that were created by man, and they're there to serve their purpose, but they're not to be treated like a human. These creatures are considered, and there's a lot of legalization going on. Like, are these things alive, or should we give them rights? And there's people actually fighting for their rights and stuff like that. So it's got like a mutant vibe to it from the X-Men, and it's kind of got like that. So if you like the X-Men and you like Swamp Thing, and this is kind of like it. This didn't last long. I think it's only
Interesting.
four issues. So it'd be interesting if they even finish the story, or if they just did away with it. The other thing I want to mention real quick is I read the last issue of The Demon. It was one issue that I was missing. It was The Demon 58. This is the Alan Grant, Garth Ennis series. This is when Garth Ennis was doing the story with John McCrae, who they're known for the Hitman.
Yeah.
This was the last battle between the angels and the demons, and it looks like the angels made their way into hell, and they were kicking hell's ass until the demon picked up this crown. It's like a crown of thorns or something like that. He puts on his head, and it gives him. It's a crown. That's what it is called. It's called a crown of horns. And once he puts that on, the whole game thing changes because the main angel that was kicking everybody's ass gets his arms torn off. And the demon just trashes him once he gets this on. He kills a lot of angels, and then he throws the crown of horns on the ground, and he says, "I can't handle this anymore." And this is rhyming demon, They talk about the different levels of hell, and once you become a rhyming demon, it's like a higher level of hell. And then when you go even higher, you might lose your rhyming. But this is definitely rhyming demon. And who picks up the crown of horns to become the Lord of Hell is Bator, which is the kind of like the bartender when Hitman and Nat are in the bar. He's like an alien creature that's just a mouth and makes a lot of farting noises and just yells, "I am Bator," and shit like that. But everybody in hell is, "All hail Bator," and the demon goes off and does his thing. But there is an interesting rhyme here, which I thought was really creative, if I can find it. But it pays homage to all the people that have worked on the demon. And it says, "I'll start with Jack," which is, we know who that is. "I'll start with Jack, the comics king, forever let his praises ring." And Alan Moore and Steve Bissett and John Totlibin, they who let this demon out into limbo land, and then Matt Wagner, thanks my man. So that was the Matt Wagner four issue miniseries. He gave credit to Alan Moore, who I just talked about the demon. We're in the Swamp Thing. Then Alan Grant, the evil Scott, and Val Siemiecki, who drew the plots. McCrae and Ennis, kings of sin, who let the Bloods Irish in, and Bad Dan Raspler, Peter T, 'tis quite a debt I owe to thee. So it's like pretty cool. It's like a summary of the series. The Demon had a good run. I mean, that kicks ass on any books today with 58 issues. All the others before him, even King Kirby's, didn't last very long. And this will probably be the longest running Demon series ever. There is another demon series, a couple other demon series. There's the Blood of the Demon, which is the John Byrne demon, and he'll always exist. But then there's Demon Knights, who featured him in the New 52. So
right.
he's always had his share of things. But I thought it was a good homage to, and he did a shout out rhyme to these creators.
Yeah, that's a cool. That's a neat idea.
Yeah, I liked it. It was a good ending. It was a series though that makes you want to go read the rest. Like, it's hard to like feel your, okay, I've completed. Well, I still have one more demon to go. It's like some odd issue I'm having trouble getting, but other than that, I have every demon book ever, and it was a weird series to read without having read the, I don't know, maybe previous five or six issues to see the battle happen, because I just jumped into the battle. But it's one of those things where I was missing this issue and the other ones I had read, but I read them a long fucking time ago. This was, I don't even know what year it is. The cover price is it's March of 95. So this is a long time ago. And as time passes and I get older, I don't remember as much as I used to.
Yeah. Yeah, it can be hard to pick stuff back up sometimes.
Yeah.
And it's like enough time goes by, you end up having to like reread stuff.
But I enjoyed them. I think the one I liked the least, just because I thought it was not a very good first issue, was Bar Sinister. It just didn't read like a good first issue, which is weird for a girl book because I usually love them, but
yeah, the concept sounded kind of interesting. Just
yeah, it's
a lot of different influences.
Yeah, it's it's really cool hybrid, but the execution is not. It doesn't get you like wanting more, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's too bad. I guess that's why it's not well known.
Yeah. But that's all I had.
Yeah, same here. So
I was short of words, but I tried to be concise because if I messed up your voice. Too long, I'll just start hacking away. It was a blessing that I was able to hit the mute button.
Yeah, comes in handy.
Although the one time that I did cough when you were in the middle of saying the, I thought I was not on mute, and I went off of mute by hitting the button, and coughed right in your ear.
Yeah, if you lose track of whether you're muted or not, that can throw a wrench into things.
Yeah, this one makes. It's a wireless headset, which is kind of nice. As a matter of fact, it's really funny, Chris, because you were talking about stray bullets.
Mm-hmm.
And you were talking about that the guy needed to go pee.
Mm.
You know what I was doing at that exact moment? I was peeing.
Nice.
Yeah.
You should have unmuted just to have like the sound effect.
It would have went perfect because of the way you were describing it. I almost did.
And people are like, man, the production values on the show are really improved.
He has to go pee.
That's funny. Yeah, speaking of peeing, I have to go soon myself.
All right, so let's wrap this up. This is Geek Brunch Retrocast, and you can reach us at geekbrunchpodcast.com. You can leave an iTunes review. We'd really appreciate it. I need to get my ass in gear sometime and get us on Stitcher. Just, it's nice to have a streaming service available instead of just being able to download these episodes onto your device.
Oh, yeah. I remember when I looked up how to do that when I put Mythmaking on there, and if I remember correctly, it was pretty easy.
Yeah, maybe you can point me to the direction, but I'm sure I could Google it. I need to do it. I've been lazy. But you could reach us at MythmakingETC. That's Chris's handle, at Mike Myers Brunch. And you could tell us if you'd like to be on the show just to talk some random retro books. It doesn't even have to be comics. It could be a retro TV show or a retro movie or something like that.
Yeah, good point.
And or retro video games. It could be, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah, basically we just go with the rule of thumb of 10 years or older. So
yeah. So we usually record at like 10:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on a Sunday. And just get in touch with us in advance so we can make sure we could sync up with you if you would like to be on the show. And you could do it through Twitter, or you could send us emails at mythmakingetc@gmail.com or mike@comicbooknoise.com. And we go to our Facebook page. That's another way to get a hold of us, at Geek Brunch Podcast. And I think that's about it. And on that note, Chris doesn't have a wireless headset, nor does he. Did he have a lot of time to pee while I was talking, because I was trying to be short. But
yeah, so
he's got to go. We should have both peed during that scene where you're talking about the pee. But
I know I could have done it too. I didn't think about that. I'm gonna have to make sure I read another comic with pissing in it for next week.
It was so ironic because you were talking about the guy having to go to the bathroom so bad.
Is there a camera in here?
Yeah, I was like, I had to go bad. Like, where I had drink. I've been trying to drink like a lot of water.
Yeah.
Like I've already, just during the podcast, I drank 2 bottled waters just to try to hydrate. Because of the throat and stuff.
Yeah.
But
one of the best things to do.
Yeah, but I'll let you go pee instead of go on further. Thank you for listening, and I'll talk to you soon, Chris.
All right, good to talk
to
you.
Say hi to everybody for me, and we'll see you very soon.
All right, talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye.